702 Prime Time.
Yana Marks joins me now as we discuss the new documentary commissioned by Showmax, The Original Sin, My Son, the Killer, and of course the director of the documentary, John Gutierrez, also talking to us from out of London. Yana, thank you so much for joining us and good evening to you.
Good evening, Aubrey. It's lovely to be on the show again.
So, another excellent documentary. I mean, Ntateng couldn't stop talking about it. She was like, this is something. This is what's the inspiration behind this?
Well, I think John should talk to the inspiration. But yeah, we are very, very proud, not only of how the story came together, but also the production value of this. This is an international co-production. We work together with the UK. John is based in the States. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to release this film. The message is very strong and it's going to speak to not only a South African, but also a global audience.
Yeah, yeah. John, thank you very much for joining us. Really, really appreciated. Let me throw that question to you behind as to the inspiration behind the this documentary and what does it aim to do ultimately?
Hi, Aubrey. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Yes, you know, this film came to me. It wasn't generated by me. This film came to me by our producer, Sarah Leita, and she's South African and currently living and working in London. But she was very moved by the story in that it told a very powerful message about femicide and the dangers of gender-based violence in South Africa and wanted to really amplify the message to women across the country. And it became, you know, possible because it is a film that crosses borders. It's a global film, in that it takes place in several different countries. And so from, you know, that filmmaking point of view, it allows for a bigger audience. And in that way, it's easier to get that kind of film made. For me personally, what inspired me, you know, when you're handed a true crime film, and I don't make true crime films. I'm kind of more scripted fiction and I'm quite frightened of them. You know, it's a lot of dark subject matter and you have to be willing to go in there and live with that darkness for a long time. So I personally, you know, didn't want to make the film. It was quite a frightening prospect to me. But you know, as an artist, that's where, you know, the serious work is. And it's looking at those things that do frighten yourself and ask yourself, why are you frightened? What scares me about this story? You know, and what it was is that, you know, I just saw connections in the kind of hyper masculine society that I grew up in and that exists, you know, in America as well as South Africa. And I began to see parallels. And, you know, I didn't want to just make a film about a brutal killing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is about that. But I also wanted to tell a story about a woman's bravery, about a woman who was not only a victim, but also found, you know, real strength to change and find redemption, you know, even if at the end that means in some ways betraying her own son.
Yeah.
But for me, it's very much a journey of interrogating, you know, the kind of patriarchal society that I grew up in,
yeah,
asking questions about it and how can I combat those things that are so ingrained in me and how can I participate in this conversation with women and, you know, show men that we need to interrogate ourselves. Yeah. We need to look at how we grew up and what that does to, you know, the other half of our world.
Yana, I mean, these are topical, topics, not only in South Africa, but specifically in South Africa, but they're global. So I suppose this particular story has resonance not only with the reality of femicide in South Africa, but femicide all over the world. I suppose let's start off by, without giving too much away, tell us the story that is, you know, this documentary, The Original Sin, My Son, the Killer. Don't give too much away because we want people to go and watch it, right? But what is the story about?
Yeah, I think what I really love in how we told the story or how we are telling the story is that it's not just, you know, this typical whodunit. Like John said, we really delve into, I think, some of the whys. I mean, it's difficult to pinpoint certain root or origin origin for certain for events of gender-based violence. But in this case, there are quite a few, let's say, factors that could have contributed to what happened to Andrea. So we delve a bit deeper and we use the strong voice of Tia Pretorius, that's a mother of Gerard. And what makes this interesting for me is that you get this very conflicted character almost. I mean, John mentioned her bravery. She's revealing so many intimate details to the public, and she didn't have to. It's just for her to explain where she comes from and to try to give us as the viewers or the producers to try to help us to understand why certain things have happened. Because we know that while there are obvious pathology related...
This is Gerard Jansen van Vieren's mom.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So while we know there are psychopathology, you know, often prevalent in cases like this, your upbringing or your nurture, you know, nature, that plays a big role in how you go around with women and how you are being brought up. So I think the film really speaks to that as well. Yeah. Not only a killing. I mean, a killing is bad enough, but there is a larger reason for this. And I think, yes, while this is a global theme, in South Africa, this is particularly relevant. We have, I mean, our president called it the second pandemic. And I listen to the news and I see all the, you know, the attempts that government is making. But then you get news like on the 8th of March, I was in London at the time and the whole entire world was celebrating International Women's Day. 4 South African women were murdered and 66 were violently assaulted in our country. Mm. This was now according to the Portfolio Committee on Police in Parliament yesterday. So, you know, you hear of all the attempts, but yeah, I would really wish to see more results and less talk. And I really hope that this film can cast light on this enormous issue that we have, especially in South Africa.
So in a nutshell, we have Gerard Jansen van Vieren, who is a serial killer. Not a serial killer. He killed his girlfriend, Andrea Fender. I'm sorry, right? And his mom is quite candid about his character and perhaps even the circumstances that lead to this crime. Why is it that is so important for you to mention, Jana? I'm sort of curious about that.
I think what's interesting for me is just, you know, she's a mother. No mother raises a child to become a killer. But now your child is a killer. He's in prison for murder. And you have to come to terms to that. So on the one side, you have someone saying, you know, this is wrong. She has this moral compass. This is wrong. But it's still a child. And we see in the film not only how the murder plays out and how Gerard is brought to book after, you know, skipping the country and being extradited and convicted eventually, but we also see how Tia is coming to terms with initially standing by her son, even helping him to escape, but then realizing, you know what, this isn't right. I can't live with this.
Mm.
And it's amazing how she made that turn and just, you know, I mean, she's part and parcel of the story to tell, listen, this isn't okay. She fought for Andrea's life by telling her own story of abuse.
Yeah, yeah. John, one of the things you said as you started the conversation is the fact that part of what happens in telling these stories is that you've got to deal with your own fear of the reality that is being told by this story. And I'm really, really interested and attracted to the Tia sort of aspect of the story, the mother of Gerard Jansen van Vieren, who becomes so candid and so pivotal in really us getting to understand. Does that play a big part in the way that you understood the story and therefore told the story, the narrative that comes from the mother? Hello, John.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, Aubrey, it's a very good question. you know, there's a lot of research done on this that Sarah led with combined artists and an incredible team of journalists and researchers there. So when I came into the project, you know, there was all that research that had been conducted. And it's a lot of information. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of people telling stories. And as a filmmaker, you have to decide, okay, what is the story you want to tell, right? Like, what is really standing out and connecting with you? And for me, it was this nature versus nurture story. And it was this mother at the center of it all. And to echo Yana in saying, you know, Thea's arc of being this person who basically aided and abetted her son in the early part of the crime and when he was first, you know, released on bail. And then doing this extraordinary arc that takes us through, you know, this incredible story, exciting story of twists and turns. And she gets to a place where she basically helps Saps. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically reveals to herself the truth that she is also a victim, and she sees herself in Andrea. And that's quite a powerful moment, you know, and it's quite a powerful arc. So that's what I wanted to tease out of her story. And that's what I was looking for when I was interviewing her. But,
is there another angle to this story that might be about a mom who is dealing with unimaginable amounts of guilt, not only for the crimes of her son in the murder case of Andrea, but the big questions that a mother asks about what role she could have played in rearing, raising a murderer, Yana. Do you think that is part of the motivation behind Tia's narrative, which is a big motivation for how the story unfolds in the documentary, Yana?
Yeah, I think Tia makes no secret of the fact that she feels guilty. It's quite clear in an interview. It's quite clear in a story. In a way, she tells the story, and you can almost feel the conflict that she has. She's saying the right thing now. She's admitting that, you know, her son is a killer. She says it in so many words. But she tells us the story of how she, like John said, aided and abetted her son initially. And you kind of see how she redeems herself during the interview even. I mean, this, it's something that she had to come to terms with, and she did.
Yeah. John, I mean, the universality of the story, the fact that this is not just a South African story. Yes, it happens in South Africa. South Africans are involved. Yes, it happens. And there are international dimensions to it too. And I understand that. But the fact that the ubiquity of femicide, the ubiquity of the conversation is international, with all of the consciousnesses around patriarchy, around the way that we are socialized as men, does the documentary go far enough in challenging the way that we are socialized and raised as men to think about the issues versus perhaps taking a position of defensiveness? I say this because I have these conversations quite a lot on this very platform, and it invariably goes to a place of defensiveness by men who feel that this is yet another man-bashing moment. Talk to me about that, John.
Yeah, I don't think this qualifies as a man-bashing film, or it's overtly kind of, you know, examining hyper-masculinity. I think it's threaded in there, and it's kind of in between the lines. You know, when we look at the community he grew up in, you know, he grew up in a far right conservative community that is quite religious. And also, you know, through interviews, we found that he was also involved in extreme white supremacist groups. Yeah. And very often, you know, we find in that space that the male is encouraged, you know, men are encouraged to be angry individuals, you know, and they're encouraged to take on these roles that, that patriarchy support. You know, one thing that's fascinating for me in the film is that Thea describes her son as a little boy, and there's some archive footage in there of him that he was kind and loved nature and loved to draw. You know, that makes him very human. And what happened to this person? Who shaped him most? What shaped him most? Right. And I think those questions are in there because it takes active participation from a community and from, you know, all those participants within a family to shape a young child. And if these were his initial kind of behaviors of being this maybe artist, intellectual, lover of nature, what happened to that and what shaped him? And I think those questions are what the film raises. And I think that allows us to look at ourselves. Yeah. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Yana.
Yana?
Yeah, I think what I would like to add is I'm not too worried about people feeling uncomfortable when they watch the film. I think if the film does that, it's making people think, and that's what we want. I agree with you, Aubrey, that men tend to have that reaction. And the more we do these kinds of films, or the more we relay this message, I think the more used to it people will become. And that's what we want. Mm. We want people to be constantly confronted with that so it can change.
You see, the reason why I asked that question, Yana, is, and I love the fact that it's weaved into those issues, those questions around patriarchy and the issues of hypermasculinity and perhaps issues of extremist ways of understanding the world, right? Is weaved into the story and isn't a direct issue about that, is because most of the time, my sense is that people don't think, they react. That most of the time when these issues arise, the default position is defense rather than thinking. And I love the fact that John is saying that it is weaved into the storyline so that we can think about it. Is that intentional, John?
It is. It is intentional. And we want, you know, it's never just one thing, right, that shapes a person. And like, that's what's important. And it's also important for us as filmmakers. I think we discussed early on, you know, it's very easy just to paint someone as an evil aggressor, and like, that's it. But then as soon as you give them, you know, a lot of dimension, put them on a spectrum, show some history, right, it becomes a human. And we're all humans with these complexities. And I think what it allows us to do in watching a film like this is that we can see ourselves in there. We can see that we all have dark sides, that we're all capable of things, that, you know, as a man, we've, you know, growing up in a patriarchal society, you know, you're jocular as a young boy, you say this, you say that, you know, you learn to treat or think about women a certain way, and there's microaggressions, all those things over time that add up. And I think what the film does is ask us to look at those things and see where they can lead, yeah, right? Because you can't just say, as a man who, you know, has grown up in a community like this, you know, oh no, I like women, I think they should be equal. Like, that's not enough, because it is an epidemic, especially in South Africa. You have to be on guard. You have to actively participate in checking yourself,
yep,
you know,
yep,
and asking yourself the questions, is this right? Is this me, or have I been taught this? And that takes time. You know, yep, we're creatures of habit. We have to continually interrogate ourselves.
Yeah.
Yep. So, by making Gerhard a more dynamic person, you know, and not just a killer, but somebody's son, right? We can all relate to that.
Sure.
And I hope that's where people can you know, see themselves in it, because at the end of the day, you know, we all know we're all capable of bad things. We're all capable of atrocities. It's just a part of humanity.
Yeah.
So I think that's what the film's trying to do.
Give us a call at 011-883-0702. The documentary drops on the 22nd of March. It's titled Original Sin, My Son, the Killer. It's on Showmax, and my guest is Yana Marx, who is making her debut as the editorial producer together with John Gutierrez, the director of the documentary. And we're just talking about, I suppose, the guts of the story. We don't want to give too much away because we want you to go and watch it. But some questions are arising around how the story is told. What is it messaging? It appears to me, Yana, that there's no argument about the heinousness of the crime, the murder. There's no argument about it, but that the documentary is about the peripheral questions that come out of how justice is pursued in a situation like this. How the mother, the society, the background of the murderer is. Talk to me about Andrea Fenta and her realities, her family, her situation in all of this.
I think we all got to know Andrea a little better through all the testament that we listened to. And yeah, I think it was quite clear that she was a lovely girl. She was quite gullible. She was very religious, having grown up in a kind of Afrikaner religious environment. And she believed that she could save Gerard. And that was part and parcel why she stayed with him, even though there was abuse from very early on in the relationship.
As you said that, I thought that maybe that might be the case, that, you know, that people love so hard sometimes that they think that they are going to save the person who is a predator in this situation. And as I was thinking it, you said it, you know, and it appears. What about her family? Do they feature at all in the documentary?
Yeah, we spoke to her her close family, her brother, her father. We spoke to her aunt, who knew her very, very well, and her uncle. And I think everyone just testified about what like an amazing human being she was. And I think it's really clear. I'm not saying anyone is perfect, but I do say I think she really felt like she could fix Gerard. Whatever hurt him in his past life, what Tia is speaking about in the documentary, she can help him to overcome it. And even though she did get a protection order against him at some point, she continued to go back. Now, I don't think we will ever really know why. But in my subjective opinion, I just think she really loved him and she really wanted, you know, to believe him when he says, no, come back. It's okay. I'll never do it again. But I think that's also what a documentary wants to do. It wants to show people that you can get out and you should get out. Interestingly enough, that's also what Tia said. Tia told me when we did our pre-interview. She said if she can warn someone, Tia being a victim of domestic violence herself, if she could warn someone, just tell them, you know, you can get out, then she would have accomplished what she wanted to do with the film, with the participation in the film.
Is the message?
So yeah, I think
is the message in that a killer of that nature is unrehabilitable. I hope that's the right word.
Yeah. I think there are obviously contributing factors. In Gerard's case, he went for psychological evaluation. According to the report that's been submitted in court, he showed antisocial traits. So they are obviously a bit more than just nurture. And I think that's quite clear in the way that he killed her. It's one thing to kill your partner in whatever situation, but this was an exceptionally brutal killing. So I think there's definitely more to him. But Andrea still decided, she continued to go back and try to fix this relationship up until that last weekend when she was killed.
Besides the interwoven conversation about gender and patriarchy and all of those things, John, it doesn't seem as though the documentary has a monolithic message. Men are bad, or people that have been raised in a white supremacist sort of environment, Christian environment, are evil and are going to kill your daughters. It doesn't sound like the documentary says that. It sounds to me like the documentary tells a story, and it has a number of interwoven narratives within the story, but it doesn't necessarily tell you how to think. Would that be fair? In other words, it doesn't sound like you're making some sort of big moral statement with this particular story.
Yeah, in no way is this like I don't think this is an educational film. I think if you're a true crime fan, this, from as far as friends that I've shared the film with have said, this is an excellent true crime film. And I think when they say an excellent true crime film, what they mean is a true crime genre film with meat on the bone, where it's not sensational and we're not and we're not glorifying a killing or a murderer. It's a film made with integrity, and it's a film made putting the victims, in center stage. They're not an afterthought. We speak to Andrew's family, and even she, I would like to think, at least visually, if you watch the film, I think, Sean Lee, our director of photography, did a beautiful job in photographing it. It's a beautiful film, right? And I think it is first a true crime film that takes you on an exciting ride with twists and turns. But the majority of it is told from the mother's perspective, right? Because she is the main character. It is because of her, right, that the whole story begins.
Yeah.
Even from back when this boy was a child, right? It is her choice to do something that motivates the action. And it is her choices later on that then take us through these twists and turns. And it's her relationship with him that forms the kind of backbone arc of that story. But do we have one message that we want to communicate, or is it trying to teach you something? No, it's only asking questions. If there's any message, it's just saying, this is a problem and we have to look at this, and it deserves our attention.
Yeah.
And let's look at how we are connected to it and what we can do to change it, because it's too much at this point, right? Across the world, it's time that we all participate,
yeah.
Especially men in this conversation, I think.
Give us a call on 011-883-0702. My guests are the creators, I suppose, of the new documentary, Original Sin, My Son, the Killer. The documentary follows the murder of 25-year-old Andrea Venter, in front of her neighbors by her boyfriend, Gerard Janssen van Vieren. And of course, Jana Max, who's making her debut as the editorial producer, and John Gutierrez, the director of the documentary, are in conversation with me about this particular documentary. Please join us. Talk to us. What are your thoughts about some of the issues that we raise in this conversation? Jana, you are the editorial producer, and of course, this is your debut, Nochal, right? And congratulations, by the way, as far as that one is concerned.
Thank you.
But talk to me. And we're talking about a genre here. We're talking about the genre of true crime stories, and the fact that there is a very, very big following for this kind of genre. You've created this. You are very experienced. You've been a journalist in this space for the longest time. You and I have been having these conversations for some time. talk to me about us, right? So we've been talking about the film itself. We've been talking about the content of the film. I'm hoping we haven't given too much away. But talk to me about us, the voyeurs, the viewers, the consumers of this genre, and perhaps this particular documentary. Talk to me about us. Is there something that we need to be worried about? The fact that we love this kind of genre, that we love to think about it. This is pretty morbid stuff. This is stuff that even scares the director, John Guterres, right? but here we are. We love this stuff. We talk about it. We think about it. We create documentaries about it. If the movie was watching us, what would it be saying about us?
Interesting question, Aubrey. I think, it's safe to say that true crime is not necessarily the thing you would play in the background while you're cooking or something.
No. Yeah.
You have to pay attention. And I think that is the beauty of true crime. I think loving it is quite a strong word. I think we
I do. I'm sorry. I'm putting up my, I love it. Yep. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think we are just fascinated by true crime. And I think there are a number of reasons for it. People love solving puzzles. I don't know if you're like me. I used to love these board games. I think one is Cluedo, and there are like other board games where you try to solve crimes. And I think what true crime does, it takes you on this journey to try to solve this puzzle. And I think a good film would not give away everything right in the beginning. Even in Andrea's case, we know that she was killed. But then there's so much more that you would want to understand, and it makes you want to sit and listen to, the next segment and the next segment. So I think watching a film and unraveling the film, or the unraveling story one scene at a time, I think that's what keeps us fascinated. And I also think, like John mentioned earlier, you deal with offenders with whom you can often relate to, except for the criminal element, hopefully. But I think we are fascinated or very interested to understand how that person's mind works. What happened that this sweet young boy you'll see in the film at 10, that was filming little flowers, how did that young boy become this horrific killer? And something I think about a lot, I think in South Africa as well, we have such a low conviction rate. Normally a documentary would come out after a court case and after there's been a sentencing. I'm not saying always, but normally. And I almost feel relieved when I watch a movie like that, seeing that, at least someone was brought to book, even though in Gerard's case, it took a few years. So I think it's still, it's really a multi-layered thing.
Yeah. John, I mean, what do you think it says about those of us who are consumers of this genre of storytelling?
Yeah, it's I think one, it's the genre, the way it actually works on our minds, and that, it's what's going to happen next, right? The kind of thriller feeling. We all like that feeling of being thrilled, like what's going to happen next, and keep asking that question and going through those twists and turns. That's exciting, right? It makes us feel something, very physical, actually. So I think that's fun. It's fun to feel that. On another level, I think, across all these darker genres, there's a duality in human beings. Most of us try and live really good lives. We try and be peaceful people. We try and do good in the world. Right. And there is a shadow side to us, like Jung says, that needs to be filled, that needs to at least, it may not be filled, but we need to give attention to, and we need to understand. And this exists in all of us, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And I think this allows us to do that. It allows us to pose those what ifs, it allows us to just see that side of humanity that maybe some of us don't see, though I know a lot of people do. And it's fascinating because I have a cousin. He's a podcast, you know, that's all horror films. And I'm like, do you want to check out my true crime film? He's like, no, I can't watch that stuff, but he can watch slasher films, you know? Because it's fake ultimately. But, and I think there's a part of us, true crime appeals to the intellectual side of us. You know, we want to understand the psychology of it, and we want to understand the psychology of people who may or may not be living with a mental illness or who've been shaped so badly by their environments. You know, it's fascinating stuff for people who are curious. And I think all true crime fans are very curious people.
Do you love crime stories? Give me a call at 11-883-0702. And why? Is there something about you that is strange and morbid? Yeah. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. It's a genre that's picking up momentum. I got to tell you. I mean, it's been around for many, many decades, maybe many, many centuries, but it's really, really picking up. And I'd be interested to hear from those of you who love the genre of true crime stories. And I wonder whether you'll take the time on the 22nd of March to tune into Showmax to watch this particular crime story, Original Sin, My Son, The Killer. The documentary follows the murder of 25-year-old Andrea Venter in front of her neighbors by her boyfriend, Gerard Janssen van Vieren. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 011-883-0702. What is it about this genre? What is it about the stories of murder that are not fiction that fascinates us so much? If the movie were watching us, what do you think it would be thinking? Conversations would it be having about us who are the consumers of this kind of genre? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that on 011-883-0702. Has it done something to you, this particular movie, Jana? Has it changed you in any way? Has it given you certain insights into human nature? And I was going to ask, are we also perhaps in our fascination of the crimes, the lives, and the influences of murderers, and the people that have been murdered. Is there perhaps an argument that may arise that we are romanticizing this situation? Jana?
I think that's common criticism often against true crime stories. But I do think people are good at compartmentalizing. Oh, my English is running out.
Yeah, it happens to me a lot.
What's real?
It happens a lot to me.
What's real and what's happened in the past and what's fiction and what's reality. So,
I was asking about the way that we even analyze and talk about the mindset and psychology of a murderer like that, the mother, for example, that whose humanity we see in her dichotomous sort of space and how she has to deal with the guilt and the morality of having to speak out. And do we not romanticize and almost in our humanizing the individuals, do we not somehow excuse, would you not be accused of, these are murderers, these are bad people, and here you are trying to humanize them, kind of thing, Jana?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think we need to humanize people because they are effectively people. And I think by humanizing, we're understanding our own human nature better. And like John mentioned, you know, that dark side we all have. I think what this film is really going to do, and that was the response we got from Andrea's family who have watched this before release, that they really believe people like Andrea finding himself in the same situation would see, you know what, I don't want this happening to me. Maybe she couldn't get out, but I can. There is a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think it's romanticizing. I do think it is, I think it is to some sense of an educational value to see what happens, what can happen, and perhaps save other people or just even plant that little seed that I don't want to go that route, down that route. Or, oh, that is actually a warning sign. She didn't see it. Andrea didn't see it at the time, or she didn't want to see it at the time. But that's actually a warning sign. Perhaps I have someone close to me that experiencing the same thing or going through the same thing, and I need to tell them they can get out.
Let's take a call from Mariah in Sandton. Hi, Mariah.
Hi, Aubrey. So nice to chat to you again. Aubrey, I'll just get straight to the point. There's something that I also would like to question, or that is niggling in my mind, is it focuses on, yes, you know, the role of men, and we don't want to demonize them, but yeah, you know, that they kind of like, you know, it's part of patriarchy and so forth. However, it strikes me also that there's an awful lot to explore in terms of the unfortunate victim, who was a victim in more ways than one, from what I understand, and I know nothing about this particular story other than what I'm hearing now. But the fact that she felt that she could, you know, save him, and that she kept going back, that in itself is it's a whole different story of, you know, that needs to be explored and address. So to me, it's not just the signs of, you know, you see these signs in a particular person, your partner in this case, but it's also in you, because your situation led you to become that victim, because you were already a victim of something else. And I think that is also needs exposure. It's not just like imbalanced in terms of, you know, putting the focus on just the one side, but it really is on the other side as well. And I think that happens more often than we know about or give enough attention to. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Mariah. John?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. You know, what's the victim's role in this? Well, you know, I think she did everything she could, and the film looks at that. She did everything that was available to her. So we don't want to paint the picture that, like, she loved him no matter what, and, you know, put herself in a dangerous situation. No, that's not the case here. Of course, there were baby steps along the way where they remained friends, they kept reconnecting, and she thought she could help him as a friend, as we all do think that we can help friends who are in, you know, bad situations or feeling down or that kind of thing. You know, she was a religious person. She was a Christian. She believed in someone being reformed and very, 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 very religious. So she believed that she could save him, and that, you know, Christ could save him, right? So that's where she's coming from in this particular story. But as things got more intense, she sought help from the police, you know, with restraining orders. Those didn't help. You know, she told people close to her. She ran away, changed her address, got a new car, you know, hid out, and he hunts her. He hunts her like she is prey in the bush, essentially. And he traps her, or entraps her in certain ways. And so she is trying to play a game where she is way out of her depth when it gets to the kind of night of her brutal killing. She thinks she can handle him, but she can't. You know, and I think maybe I can't say, you know, what people think when they're in those situations, because it's kind of what the caller said. It is a thing that men always reach for. Well, why doesn't the woman just leave? Right? Sometimes they can't. Sometimes they can't because, if they leave, they believe they will die, yeah, or someone close to them will get hurt, you know? So yes, love is a part of it, but it's not the only thing. There are real threats and real danger involved with when it comes to people like this. And we can't forget that her choices are also, you know, they don't exist outside of patriarchy. She grew up in that same space.
Sure, sure.
I don't know if you want to add to that, Jana.
No, I think we're just looking at, you know, systemic failures as well. Like John said, she got the protection order. The fact that it didn't work for her. There are so many things we often discuss it, that there were so many things that actually just went wrong, went south for her. For her to come to land into this situation. And so much, so many of the issues were the systemic issues, the MPA, or let's say the protection order that wasn't, you know, when they contacted the police at the time, the police didn't react to the protection order. The fact that he managed to skip the country while on bail. The fact that they couldn't find him. He was in Brazil hiding, then he was helped there. Then that side, the authorities failed Andrea again after death when he was released a bit earlier from his sentence in Brazil. He was there for a petty crime before being extradited to South Africa. Yeah. But then he disappeared again.
Yeah.
So it's as if there's these events just piling up one thing after the other that just goes wrong, which makes it impossible for a woman or for someone that really, you know, tries to do everything, tries to get out of the situation. So no wonder she was just too scared. She didn't want to leave him or, like John said, cut all the contact, although she tried to, because she was scared of him. The systems that were supposed to protect her didn't protect her.
Yeah. Yeah, and all so familiar in this country, all of those systemic issues that you are raising, Jana. As we close, where, when, how? I've already mentioned that the documentary drops on the 22nd of March. Any more details, perhaps, that our listeners need to know, Jana?
I just think, you know, on the 22nd, the film will drop, but many people ask me at what time is it going to show. No, when it drops, it's going to stay on Showmax, so you can watch it for, I don't know, years to come. And even people abroad has asked us about this. We have international distributors, so in due time, that film will also be available abroad. We're just not sure exactly where.
Okay. Jana Marks, thank you very much and congratulations once again on your debut as the editorial producer of this film. And John Gutierrez, thank you very much for joining us in this conversation and congratulations on this documentary. Well done.
Thank you,
Aubrey. All
right. Lovely to be here.
Thank you so much. The documentary is called Original Sin, My Son, the Killer. I think it's worth a squiz.